Good morning. I was recently asked if I would describe myself as a competitive person. And I thought about it for a second because my competitive side doesn't always come out. I realized that I'm competitive when I know I'm going to win. If I'm operating within my strengths, I'll play all day, but otherwise, I'll just hang out. It's not as fun to play when my weaknesses are revealed, but it's too bad that life doesn't always work out that way. In the summer of 2015, I was working as a camp counselor at a Christian adventure camp. The first 3 weeks were dedicated to staff training, followed by a big celebration before the first group of campers arrived. I was feeling on top of the world. I loved being at camp, and I was so excited for campers to come pouring in just a couple of days. That all changed, though, when I got the unexpected news that my pastor back home had died. Suddenly, I was not on top of the world anymore. I felt confused, afraid, weak, defeated, helpless, and angry. I wanted to go home because I no longer felt like I had the strength to continue. But I kept being reminded of our passage for this morning found in 2 Corinthians. My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. I clung so tightly to that verse throughout the summer. It's often in our weakness that the most vulnerable parts of ourselves are brought to the light. And that makes us uncomfortable. We all fight to be perceived as strong, whether that be physically or emotionally. We do our very best to not let people see those weak parts of us. But when thinking about Paul's ministry, weakness is something that he must have been all too familiar with. The Greek word asthenia, which we often translate as weakness or frailty, is used 24 times throughout the New Testament, with most of those occurrences being in Paul's letters. It's safe to say that Paul knew what it was to feel weak, defeated, and beat down. 2 Corinthians is known as Paul's most vulnerable expression of his life and ministry journey. Most scholars will say that this letter consists of three major movements, with our text for this morning being positioned within the third. In these chapters, Paul is appealing to the Corinthians to embrace his ministry of suffering and self-giving because of who God has revealed himself to be. This morning, we're going to be in chapter 12, where Paul begins by describing from the third person a vision and a revelation from the Lord. We're going to pick up reading in verse 7, where Paul has now shifted back to the first person. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, beginning in verse 7. Therefore, in order to keep me from becoming conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord for him to take it away from me. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. This is the word of the Lord. This is one of those passages that is so easy to quote, but it's much more complicated to live and to believe. It's the total opposite of what we are comfortable with, and we'd love it if we could just ask for everything on the side. We'll take the grace, but maybe without the thorn. My friends often laugh at me for being a rather picky eater. I'll order a hamburger, but with no cheese, no lettuce, no tomato, no onions. Actually, just plain and dry. But we don't get to make those same picky requests when it comes to the hard things in life. We see that through Paul's story, and yet he continues to point to God's power that is revealed in the midst of his weakness. What is this thorn in the flesh that Paul speaks of? That's a question that scholars are still trying to answer concretely. We can assume that the thorn is a persecution of sorts, a physical ailment, or psychological distress. But I think if we get too wrapped up in discerning what exactly the thorn was for Paul, then we'll miss out on the bigger picture. God allowed Paul to be struck by the thorn, and God's power is able to transcend. The thorn in the flesh will remain ambiguous to us, but in the midst of the ambiguity, we are invited to think for a moment what our thorn in the flesh is. Our thorns, in the moments when we think we are completely at the end of ourselves, cause us to be wholly reliant on the God who can. What Satan intended to torment Paul is transformed to proclaim Christ's power. We find this in Genesis 50, when Joseph forgives his brothers after his father's death. And he says, "Even though you intended to harm me, God intended it for good." We know through studying Joseph's story together that he was met with many challenges. And in the midst of them all, God was writing a different story over his life. This is really hard to see and to believe at times. We get so clouded and focused on what is not going right or going as we hoped, and it's hard to see the larger story that God is writing. In those times, it is comforting to immerse ourselves in stories like this one as we discover more of God's presence with us. I think it's important to recognize that Paul did not appreciate the thorn in his flesh, right? Verse 8 says that he pleaded with the Lord 3 times for it to be taken from him. Paul's pleading reminds us when Jesus prayed in Gethsemane for the Lord to take the cup from him. Jesus knew what he was going to pay. He knew it wasn't going to be easy. And for Paul's story, there is no quick fix offered in the midst of his pleading. But that does not mean that his prayer went unanswered. I love this verse because I think it shows our very humanity. We know what it is to plead for our story to be written differently, for the pain to be gone, and for healing to come. And yet, sometimes, we don't get the answer that we've so desperately longed for. We likely feel disappointed and confused. But we know the story doesn't end there. If we look forward to verse 9, we see that God answered Paul's prayer in a way that he did not expect. He gave the strength to overcome his weakness. Paul received the necessary grace and power to bear the affliction, and even more, to overcome that affliction. Again, we hear Jesus' prayer in Gethsemane, "Yet not my will, but yours be done." It must have taken all the strength and the confidence for Jesus to muster up that prayer. Jesus knew in that moment that regardless of the cup being taken from him, the power of God was going to overcome. May we also be confident that regardless of our thorn and regardless of our weakness, God will grant us the grace and the strength we need to overcome it. When we think there is no way forward, it is the transcending power of God that allows us and empowers us to embrace our challenges and our weaknesses. Jesus tells Paul, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." And I believe God is telling us the same thing. My grace is sufficient for you. One of my seminary professors would say, "Grace is not just the unmerited favor that saves us, but it is a force that sustains throughout our lives." Paul learns that the thorn in his flesh will not disqualify him from the ministry that God has called him to. Our weaknesses and trials do not prevent us from living into the fullness of who God has created and called us to be. But rather, we see that Christ's power is made perfect. The same power that was revealed through the crucifixion and the resurrection is made perfect. Christ's power is brought to completion. What Paul was originally pleading for God to remove, he is now able to boast about because he has seen God's grace and power transform it. When we see the power of God at work in our lives, we cannot help but proclaim it. We ought to be eager and excited to share of Christ's power working within us and around us. The Pauline scholar, Dr. David Garland, says, "His weakness becomes the vehicle by which God's grace and Christ's power is most fully manifested to himself and to others." The idea of feeling like our weaknesses or trials somehow exempt us from being used by God is not new. I mean, we see it all throughout the Old Testament. As Abraham says, he is nothing but dust and ashes. Moses questions, "Who am I?" And he gives a series of excuses. Gideon says he's the weakest of the clan and the least in his family. And David says he's only a poor man. What is our excuse? We seem to forget, or at least I forget, that it's not about our strength and our abilities, but it's in our weakness, when we feel the most vulnerable, that Christ's power is ever so near. I'm reminded of 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 27 through 29, as it says, "But God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. God chose what is low and despised in the world, the things that are not, to reduce to nothing the things that are, so that no one might boast in the presence of God." Because of who God has revealed himself to be, we are able to boast. It's not of ourselves or our own strength, but we proclaim the power and the grace of Christ. Our passage concludes with Paul recognizing that through weaknesses and hardships, he has come to know more of who God is. He is able to press on and endure for the sake of Christ. In the moments when we feel completely rid of ourselves, we can rest in God's presence and have the assurance that his grace is all that we need. God is working in ways that we are not always able to see or understand. The summer I spent at camp humbled me to see God's grace sustaining me each day and to see the power of God transcend. It wasn't about me and what I felt that I had the strength to do, but in the midst of my weakness and my confusion, I had nothing but to rely on who God was revealing himself to be. You may be wondering why I chose this passage. When I was asked to preach and was given freedom to choose a text, it seemed kind of daunting. I mean, there's so many stories to choose from, and I had no idea how I was going to make that decision. But I kept coming back to this passage for a couple of reasons. One, I found myself clinging to the hope that it offers us. And even more, I really appreciated the complexity of it as well. The vulnerability that is heard in Paul's words invites us to find ourselves within the text. At some point, we can all relate to the questions and the pleading if we're being honest with ourselves. And in those very moments, we are met with hope. A hope that transcends because of the person of Jesus Christ. Christ offers us his all-sustaining power and empowers us with his strength. We will walk a little differently than we did before, and with each step, we are reminded of the God who meets us, who sustains us, and who strengthens us with resurrection power.